And I'll call this meeting of the State Government Finance Division to order and just do a, Ms. Burke, we have a quorum.
Yes, a quorum is present.
Okay, thank you. This is a remote hearing pursuant to House Rule 10.01. The meeting documents are posted on the State Government Finance Division website. And Representative Claiborne, can you do you want to approve the minutes?
Chair Nelson, I apologize. I haven't got them in front of me at this moment. I would like to ask, was it posted in the minutes that I was missed on the last roll call vote of our committee meeting?
Ms. Sprecha.
Yes, it's noted in the minutes.
Thank you. And I'll have to ask someone else to approve the minutes as I don't have them before me.
Okay, Representative Hewitt. See, on the hook call, Representative Gordon. Representative Hewitt.
I so move.
Representative Hewitt approves the minutes, moves to approve the minutes for the May 5th meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. And there's an oral amendment for 45 or for we have an amendment to this, and I believe there's an oral amendment that's got to be done to the DE. Ms. Roberts, can you explain the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the amendment is to the DE amendment on line 1.8. Strike the word funds and insert the word appropriations. And this is a technical amendment suggested by staff to add clarity to the timeline. Appropriations is a more specific term. And this makes it clear that if the grant funds are encumbered by June of 2020, then they are available until the end of June 2022.
Okay, does everybody understand that? And if everybody wants to unmute themselves, we can we'll do a vote on that. All in favor of the amendment to the amendment, the change in the word funds to appropriation. I got that right, Helen?
To appropriations.
To appropriations. Say change funds to appropriations. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, so then I'll move the DE-1 amendment. All in favor of the DE-1 amendment as a
Mr. Chair, on the amendment, you should probably take a roll call vote.
Okay. Okay, all in favor of the DE-1 amendment as amended. Ms. Breck, you want to take the roll?
Yes. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Claiborne.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Akam.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Green.
Aye.
Representative Hertas.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Klum.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
18 ayes, 0 nays.
Thank you, members. Members, and what this amendment or what this amendment does is just the 4500 was a vehicle bill we had come over in case we had something come up and we needed to have a bill, move a bill through in a hurry. But what this bill does now that it's been amended, it was brought to our attention by the University of Minnesota and several nonprofit organizations that there are ongoing grant agreements with a variety of state agencies, and many of these grants are set to end on or around June 30th, 2020. and the projects may have been delayed due to the COVID-19 virus. The university and nonprofits have worked with the Minnesota Management and Budget and Grants and the Grants Management and Budget Department and the Department of Administration to come up with this mutually agreed upon language to resolve the problem. We have individuals from MMB and the Department of Administration to respond to questions. And we have two witnesses who want to testify. And I'd like to now recognize these witnesses who have asked to be asked to testify. First on my list is Mary Ellis from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. And or is it Marie? But anyway, are you here, Miss Ellis?
I'm here, yes. It's Marie Ellis.
Marie, okay. You want to identify yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Certainly. My name is Marie Ellis. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. Good morning, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. Thank you for time today to explain why we support this legislation. And a quick thanks to Jim Geldman as well, your committee administrator, for really helping to make this happen today and for setting aside this vehicle bill with some good foresight. Thank you for that. MCN is the largest statewide association of nonprofits in the country. We represent over 2,200 member organizations all across the state. Many nonprofit organizations, as you know, provide essential services funded in part by state contracts. And right now, they're simply unable to meet some of those contract deliverables due to the pandemic. For example, organizations that have state contracts to provide employment training are unable to do in-person training, and many of the participants lack access to a computer or reliable internet to do online training. And so those trainings are just simply on hold until the group gathering safety guidelines are relaxed. Other programs that are similarly affected include adult day programming and after-school programming, really everything necessitating in-person training or group interaction. Another factor that contributes to providers not being able to meet their contract deliverables is a decline in referral for services. For example, family support organizations are seeing decreased referrals from the county for parent support case management. Why? Because kids are not in settings where child abuse is being reported right now. And fewer reports of child abuse means fewer referrals for parent support, which then means less ability for the organizations providing those services to meet their contract deliverables. And I think you'll understand why we need to maintain as much stability in those organizations as possible. When children are back in school or back in summer programs, they will be seeing an influx of referrals and need to maintain that continuity to be able to serve those families. So to sum it up, allowing organizations with state contracts additional time to fulfill those essential services that they're contracted to perform would be beneficial to the organizations, the Minnesotans they serve, and the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ellis. And next we have Chris Kramer. Are you on the...
I am indeed.
There we go. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, Ranking Member Albright, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Chris Kramer. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota. It's been challenging times at the University of Minnesota, but we've risen to that challenge, and I hope you've seen the many critical contributions that your research university has made to confront the pandemic, including developing testing capacity with your generous support and in partnership with the Mayo Clinic, data-driven public health models informing the decisions of the governor and the Minnesota Department of Health, engineering innovations to get around supply chain bottlenecks, and that includes masks, ventilators, gowns, hoods, many engineering controls, and of course, state-of-the-art medical care and clinical trials. And we're also looking forward to our education and innovation activities being part of a solution to what we all hope will be short-term economic woes, working with federal partners, Minnesota business and industry, and of course, yourselves. I'm here to offer our support for the amendment to House File 4500 to allow the university and others to extend the timeline to complete state-sponsored projects currently underway. The COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent directives to work from home has touched the work of university personnel across our campus system. That includes hundreds of faculty, staff, and students working daily on research and other projects to address Minnesota's greatest challenges. Thanks to all of you, many of these projects are supported by generous and needed financial contributions and support from the state of Minnesota. And the state's a critical partner for us. We trust we're a critical partner for the state as well. We have about 650 active state-funded awards right now, and roughly 150 of those are scheduled to expire on or before June 30th. Within those 150 set to expire in June are projects funded from at least 18 different state agencies or programs, with a cumulative award value on those expiring by June 30 of $55 million. This includes projects like terrestrial invasive plant management being done by our Department of Forest Resources, assessing the release of mercury and sulfur on aquatic communities done by our Department of Soil, Water, and Climate, and training caregivers on helping disabled individuals succeed in independent living and self-care done by our Institute on Community Integration. Under normal circumstances, university personnel would complete their projects by June 30th, if not earlier. But due to most of our faculty members, students, and others maintaining distance and staying safe at home, they've not been able to complete these projects as originally planned, although they're poised to do so when public health conditions permit. This legislation would afford them additional time to complete the projects once our operations are normalized without losing state funding or being forced to start over again. The legislation does not appropriate any additional resources or authorize any additional projects. It merely allows us extended time to complete those projects. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. We're grateful for your support.
Thank you. And we also have Eric Hallstrom, who's on the line to answer questions. And with that, members, are there any questions of the testifiers or any questions about the bill? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate this union-crafted vehicle. And why 2 years? I could understand 6 months. It seems as if 2 years is quite a long extension.
Mr. Kramer, Ms. Ellis, or Mr. Hallstrom? Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although the language says 2 years, under current law, there's the ability to certify for a one extra year. And since this legislation refers to being notwithstanding the current accounting statutes that apply, this actually, by allowing 2 years in this legislation, it's giving you one more year than you would normally have available to you. So it's not, in fact, 2 years in all cases. It would be, for most grants, a one-year extension or a certification of that encumbrance.
Thank you. Representative Vogel, or actually, Representative Quam, did you have further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's basically... It seems as if it's a extensive amount of time since a large quantity of businesses have been able to work remote. And I was hoping there were some specific reasons why special things was needed to go out 2 years. Maybe if somebody did have how these are so much different than anything else and you're adding, that extension.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to offer a comment on that.
Mr. Kramer, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, if I understood what MMB, the representative from MMB, just said, it's offering an additional 1 year. And while even 1 year may sound a little long, there are some projects that involve seasonal measurements or activities. And so investigating planting at a certain time of the year, for instance, or weather. And if it occurred during this period where we haven't been able to accomplish that work, we need to wait until the next time that seasonal event rolls around. However, the majority of projects, we presume, would in fact be finished in a shorter amount of time, but it would be helpful to have that flexibility.
Representative Quam, is that?
That's what I had anticipated. I just wanted it on the record.
Thank you, sir. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to some extent, maybe echoing Representative Quam's concerns with the length and also the scope. I think this started off a little bit narrower, much narrower relative to the University of Minnesota. Now it's broadened and it's going out a year. I guess he had already asked the questions, but I'd I want to express my concerns because I understand what's going on here, and there's a lot of things that we have to address. But I think sometimes we tend to liberalize too much of this stuff at the beginning, and then as we go through the process, we find that we've made it less easy for the legislature to monitor this. So in the current form, I just can't support this because of the scope and the timeline being put out so far relative to those initial conversations that were going on.
Thank you. I think that was more of a comment than a question. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there someone on the call this morning from MMB?
Yes, Mr. Hallstrom is.
Thank you. Mr. Hallstrom, this question is directed to you. I understand that we have clarification now that we're just extending out by an additional year. But in light of Mr. Kramer's comments about the growing season, particularly with the agricultural sector not getting readings in the current one, plants die, we regrow them in the following year. I understand about that. Could you help me understand why we, again, to echo Representative Vogel's comments, why we're extending it on a blanket perspective for all grants, as opposed to taking into consideration, as Mr. Kramer also said, that some might complete in a much shorter order and not need that extension? Wouldn't it be more prudent to extend it blanket coverage for 6 months till the end of the year, and then consider those projects that need further time on a individual specific basis, so that we're understanding what needs more time as opposed to just extending the clock for the deadlines that are already served by those grants for everyone?
Mr. Hallstrom, there's also Ms. Munzer's on the phone that if she's going to answer, maybe I'll answer that question too. But Mr. Hallstrom.
Yeah, let me thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. It's a great question. It's actually part of what we struggled with in the design of this. Think of this as an accounting limitation that currently prevents agencies from working with grantees to create that appropriate calendar for completion of a project. Right now, you have 1 year of additional certification that's available. If you miss that year, the funds cancel, and you have to essentially either reappropriate or start from scratch. This gives I should step back and say it's not a blanket extension or certification. It's the ability to extend for that second year. Right now, many grantees don't extend or certify a second year of their encumbrance because they don't need to. They complete the work within the grant period. But the existing statutory accounting scheme assumes that since a payment may not be made until the completion of the work on that grant contract, that there needs to be some flexibility to make that payment and continue that encumbrance after the end of a fiscal year. And this recognizes that because of the current circumstances and the wide variety of grant agreements out there, that a second year could be a necessity in order to complete some of these activities. Granting agencies and grantees will be actually working with each other to come up with the terms of any particular grant a revision to a work plan or something along those lines. What this does is it gives agencies the flexibility to have that conversation and tailor something that works for the grantee. It would not automatically extend the length of time that these funds are available for all grants.
And members, if you look at the language that's in the bill, but in the amendment that we put on the DE amendment, these have to be approved by the Commissioner of Management and Budget, and they may be granted an extension. It's not an automatic extension for everybody. It's they have to come and ask, and then they have to be approved. So it's not just a blanket extension. It's they have to get approval to do it.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The permissive language of may be certified, I'm wondering if someone could give me, and I certainly am not trying to argue the point of blocking research, but I am trying to appreciate, you know, the stickiness of the words that are in this DE. And so to the point of may be certified, can someone just illuminate for the members of the committee what that process in vague or whatever terms possible might look like in terms of an appeal or a progress report, just to kind of flesh out what that looks like for the members of the committee?
Mr. Hallstrom or Ms. Munzer? Mr. Hallstrom.
I may need to pass this one off to my colleagues at the Office of Grants Management, but this is an accounting transaction. It takes place within the statewide accounting system, and it is how we track and attach appropriation activity to anticipated spending. It's an encumbrance. It's not infrequent that an encumbrance extends beyond the end of a fiscal year so that you can then tie a spending back to the actual appropriation that the legislature agreed upon. And more often than not, this would be a transaction that happens between agency fiscal staff and MNB accounting staff, where there would be a notification that this under current law, the certification is also permissive. So there needs to be a notification. And then that is tracked in the accounting system. And we know how to ensure that the funds that are being spent are actually available.
Ms. Munzer, if you can enlighten us.
Good morning.
You already identified yourself. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Naomi Munzer with the Office of Grants Management. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, and Eric. Yes, just to reiterate how Eric described the process, and in addition,
I know your father and mother, right?
We have
Deb, one second. Deb, yeah, thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Munzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. We have a state grant policy framework that supports the ongoing communication between state agencies and grantees with respect to ongoing reporting and a process to support formal amendments. So our policies work in tandem with this certification process to ensure that agencies understand progress that grantees are making on their projects.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll indulge me for just a couple more questions. Mr. Hallstrom, understanding that there is no fiscal note attributable to this DE or the underlying bill as it stands now, but just from a perspective for, do we know just how many grants this would entail?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I don't actually have a roll-up of grant activity that this would apply to give you a total number. I believe that is a knowable fact that we should be able to get for you, and I can work with folks at admin to make sure you have adequate information on the amount. This would apply to grants that are scheduled to cancel at the end of this fiscal year. So that could be a grant that was appropriated in fiscal year 20. And as I said, current law would allow them to have 1 year of additional certification. This would facilitate a second year if necessary. This could also apply to a grant that was in that certification year. And so they had planned to complete their activity on that grant in fiscal year 20. And as a result of the disruptions from the coronavirus response, they essentially lost that certification year. This would provide for that a second year. So this wouldn't apply to only grants in a single fiscal year, but grants that are currently where the appropriation is set to cancel. But I will do a little research for you and try to get a roll up of that universe.
And if you could get us that information before this goes to Ways and Means, that would be great, because I'm sure we need to know that information. Just give us a rough idea of how many we're talking about. Representative Bowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just final question. I'm becoming a little more comfortable after these explanations in terms of the process, but also the, I guess, the nature of the impact that COVID-19 has had on probably prolonging the research that's being done. But Mr. Chair, in light of this, and I know you're the author of the bill, I'm wondering if for comfort language, as it moves to Ways and Means, we might look at amending your bill to avail us of a greater understanding at end of year what projects still are, just alliterate on the research grants that are still pending that would cancel, so that we have a better understanding in terms of the effect that this extension, or as it would pass into law, or if it were not to pass into law, what would become fragile, if you will, if the extension was not offered. I'd just like to understand a little more in terms of what's going on throughout the system for these grant research, and then avail the legislature of some information in terms of the effect that the extension would have, both positive and negatively. So we can take that offline, but I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, sir. The next question I have here is from Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know why I have a feedback, but I want to say thank you to all of the members on the committee for this really important and constructive conversation. And Representative Albright, I'm really glad that you raised the concern about our agricultural research projects that might be coming through the University of Minnesota. When we are talking about seasonal work, depending on what the project is, you lose many, many months in the time that that research has to be restarted. And as we are thinking about this, and I want us to not lose sight of what the opportunity costs might be to us if we cancel these grants. The University of Minnesota talked about 150 grants that will be impacted by this June 30th expiration date. And we're talking about $55 million worth of grants. If we were to lose the value of that research that has already been done, that's an incredible cost and a loss of resources that we have already expended in our state. So I want to make sure that we're talking about not just time, but there's an opportunity cost here too. And we want to capture as much of the research that we had hoped to gain. All of these projects were vetted. All of these projects were considered important that we spent our state resources on them. So I would ask the members to please consider just allowing this extension, especially for those projects that are already on their extra year. Research is not clean. It has bumps and complications along the way. And we want to make sure that we are capturing the value for our taxpayers who have invested this money into these research projects. And they, when I was looking at the list of projects that are out there, they are extensive, they are important, and we need to do this important work for the state. So I ask our members to please vote for the full extension. And then also I would say to you, if we were only to say we would review it at the end of the year, we are out of session. What would that look like? I don't know. So I'm just going to ask that we trust the individuals that we put our trust in previously to do this work, and know that they will spend our dollars wisely as they have already been vetted. Thank you.
And members, this isn't just research grants. This is also nonprofits that have been given grants that to do various work. And so it's not just research work. Any other further questions? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too appreciate the conversation. I guess my initial comments were probably driven more by a lot of the conversations we've been having in the legislature lately with bringing the authorities for authorization back to the legislature where I feel they belong. So with the conversation that's occurred here, I can understand more fully what's going on, and I'd be okay with this, and hopefully as it goes through Ways and Means as well, maybe a few little tweaks to make sure, because my big concern has been that we as a legislature are the ones that appropriate, and we're responsible for making sure those appropriations are done properly. And when I see this kind of stuff, it just kind of grabs me sometimes and says, hey, let's pause. But I think it's at this point, from my perspective, relative to the conversation, a good idea to move on. And hopefully, like I said, maybe you can do a few little tweaks for Ways and Means. Thank you.
And members, maybe when it gets to Ways and Means, we can look at reporting language beginning of next session of what has been extended and how this has worked out. But members, with that, I see no further questions. I'll renew my motion that House File 4500 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Ms. Breck, can you please call the roll?
Yes. Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cleburne?
Aye.
Representative Albright?
Aye.
Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Aye.
Sorry, can you repeat that, Representative Green?
Yes. Yes.
Representative Hertas?
Yes.
Representative Hewitt?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keel?
Aye.
Representative Lippert?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mason? Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
Affirmative.
Representative Vogel?
Aye.
18 ayes and 0 nays.
The motion's been approved, and this will be on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, members. The next bill we have, Representative Tabke has House File 4597, and I will move that House File 4597 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Tabke, if you want to describe your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to see everyone. This is a bill for the Minnesota Racing Commission that will help to handle some COVID-related items that have come up since the stay-at-home order and different things have been happening here in Minnesota. And so with this bill, it does three main things. And one is it allows purse money coming into the tracks to be used for other items, capital expenses and operations to help smooth out the bumps that we're going to see financially here as the tracks move forward. It changes the amount that the advanced daily wagering, deposit wagering folks pay to the state from 1% of all bets to 2% of all bets. And it allows the race tracks to race for less than 50 days under extraordinary circumstances. So this bill, the entire thing sunsets December 31st of 2021. So it goes through next racing season to make sure that we are fully out of this COVID issue. And so this summer, both the Running Aces track and Canterbury Park track, which is here in Shakopee, is they will statutorily, they have to run races whether there's a crowd there or not. And so this summer there will be horse racing, and people from all over the world, except for those in Minnesota, will be able to bet on it. We originally, in the bill, as it was first introduced, had hoped to find a clear solution between all the interested parties in order to have a solution that allowed Minnesotans to bet off track on races that are happening here in Minnesota. And we were not able to get to that solution and that agreement from all of the interested parties. And so we did not move forward with that piece, but there's still a significant amount of good things that need to happen to make sure that we keep the horse racing industry in Minnesota as strong as possible.
And with that, I see we have several people signed up to testify. And if you can keep your testimony short and concise, it'd be great because we can all get in. First, I see Steve May from the Minnesota Racing Commission. It says Steve May. Well, to do the fiscal note on it, Mr. May. Or is that
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Yeah, Representative Tabke.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
My notes that I've got, my annotated agenda here, and I guess that's why I've got a question here. I see Mr. May and later says he's available to respond to questions.
Yes.
Rep Tabke.
Steve May is Mr. May is the head of the Minnesota Racing Commission, and he is the one that handled the fiscal note for the bill. And he's just going to talk a little bit about why, how the money was being moved around in order to help the tracks and make sure that the racing industry stays strong.
Mr. May, if you want to explain the fiscal note. Mr. May. Is he still with us? Oh, there he is. Okay. Mr. May.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve May. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. I think Representative Tabke did a great job of explaining the highlights of this bill. Really on the finance part of this, we understand that the racetracks will not be able to offer live wagering or simulcast wagering at the racetracks this summer. We're fully prepared for that due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The wagering dollars, a great portion of those will shift to these account operators, these advanced deposit wagering operators. So what the plan is that the fees would be increased through this bill, that the regulatory fees that those ADW providers are assessed, and those monies that would be created could then be used to offset some of the regulatory cost that was in the original statute on this to operate live wagering and the oversight of parimutuel wagering at the racetracks. The other portions of this, the use of PERS subsidies for capital improvements, those were detailed in some agreements between the parties involved, and again, would sunset, as Representative Tapke said, next year. The Racing Commission feel like this is a pretty good compromise on this, and we will help fund our operations here. I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you or any of the other committee members have on this.
Okay, thank you, and I'll go to get the testimony out of the way, and then we can ask questions. Mr. Holton, my next person on my list. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Court Holton, and I represent the Minnesota HBPA, which is the thoroughbred horse racing organization in Minnesota. I would like to thank Representatives Albright and Tabke and you, Mr. Chairman, for your continued support of our industry. As I said, I represent the horse people, the owners, the trainers, their employees. When we race, all of our revenue comes from live attendance at the track by race fans. This is quite different from other pro sports like the Vikings and the Twins, and that they get ticket revenue from people who attend, and they get concession revenue, et cetera. But their revenue basically comes from TV and TV contracts and advertising contracts. We require our fans' participation to have any revenue. Right now it appears that those fans may not be at the track for this race meet, and therefore that revenue will not be there. As Representative Tabke mentioned, we had devised a method where our fans...
Thank you for calling me back. I didn't expect to hear from you that fast.
1 second.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yes.
Find...
I muted her.
Thank you. I was trying to look at the same thing. Go ahead, Mr. Holden.
This is just like being home. I always get interrupted. And, we have devised a method where they could participate at home and safely, unfortunately, and without doing off-track betting. Unfortunately, that is not in the bill. So, we look for this season to be a financial disaster. Nevertheless, we are asked to this committee is that you do move this bill on to Ways and Means and hopefully move it off the floor to the governor's desk. I'm going to, for various reasons, I'm going to limit my remarks to that. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. Next, I have James Goldenstein.
Yes, that is correct. My name is James Goldenstein, and I am from Shakopee. First, I want to thank everybody for your time and listening to my thoughts. I want to first thank Representatives Brad Tapke and Tony Albright for all their time they have done for our local horse racing tracks. This is not the first time they have taken the time to address concerns or issues with horse racing. They are very knowledgeable in regards to the operations and laws in Minnesota in regards to horse racing. Just to let everybody know, I have zero connections with Canterbury Park or Running Aces. I do not work for them or own horses. I also have zero connections with either representatives. I'm just a horse racing fan that wants to keep horse racing going in the state of Minnesota. I want to state I'm all in favor with what both reps have brought forward to help improve Canterbury Park and Running Aces during these times. If these items are not moved forward, it would cause irreversible consequences to both Canterbury Park and Running Aces. This is due to how the laws for horse races have been written. These temporary changes brought forward will allow Canterbury Park and Running Aces to operate during these times. There have been other horse racing tracks across the country that have made changes to run without fans during these times and have done so successfully. These include the following. In Florida, Gulfstream Park and Tampa Bay Downs. Arkansas, Oak Lawn Park. Nebraska, Fauner Park. Oklahoma, Will Rogers Down and Remington Park. California, Los Alamitos. New York is currently working on a plan to open Belmont Park without fans. Churchill Downs, the home of the Kentucky Derby, is planning to reopen on May 16th. It is important to know that Canterbury Park and Running Aces will not be the first, second, third, or fourth to track to open like this. Lessons learned from these other locations can be used to correctly open these tracks safely in Minnesota. I strongly urge everyone on this committee to move forward with this. Once again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Goldenstein. Next, I have Andrew Offerman. Mr. Offerman, you want to identify yourself for the tape?
Flexibility to the
minister. Mr. Offerman, if you want to start again, you were muted.
Andrew Offerman, Vice President of Racing at Canterbury Park. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Canterbury Park is supportive of this measure in that it provides needed flexibility to the Minnesota Racing Commission and additional resources during a challenging time as presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. As Canterbury Park continues to incur its full regulatory costs despite not being open to members of the public, this legislation, as described by Mr. May, provides flexibility and additional resources for the commission to continue to do its job. And Canterbury Park is supportive of allowing that to proceed. I'd be happy to answer any questions from Canterbury Park's perspective, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Offerman. The next I have, I've got Joe Newton here is available to answer questions. And Steve Maida is here to answer questions. So members, are there any questions? Wait a couple seconds here for someone to put their hand up. Representative Albright, I see you've raised your hand.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I appreciate your willingness to hear this bill this morning. Representative Tabke and I have worked to promote tourism as well as the Canterbury situation over the last several years. we find ourselves in a bit of a predicament because of the exceptional nature of Canterbury and the racetrack itself from a regulatory standpoint, but also from a constitutional perspective in terms, or statutorial, I should say. It's not going to be a very easy racing season for Canterbury. And that being said, I think this bill, while it has or was more robust in its attempt to provide for a financial exit strategy through the season for the owners as well as the horse owners and racetrack participants, we find ourselves in a number of situations where we did have to come to a resolution of some differences. This bill recognizes a resolution of those differences. I want to thank Representative Tabke for working on behalf of the Racetrack Association, the horse owners, and other interested parties to come to resolution of those differences in a timely manner that would allow for the racing season to commence hopefully very soon. This is an industry that, if you take a look at the fiscal note, this is not coming from the general fund. This is actually where the racetrack participants and the associations themselves actually are paying the fees that provide for the resources to keep them safe, provide for the safety of the horses, and provide for the opportunity to display their breed, their horse racing stock, and hopefully in the future to again celebrate with the participants at the track of a very enjoyable opportunity for outdoor hospitality. That being said, members, the fiscal note is really encumbered of itself and does not obligate itself to the general fund if anyone is concerned about this. This is just maintaining and really trying to triage the patient, to use a medical term, to hopefully regain and stabilize that industry for a future consideration, just getting them through this season, albeit on a very diminished basis. And I do hope, as Mr. Holton expressed, that the damage is not permanent and that we do recover back to a more robust setting in the subsequent season. So, Mr. Chair, I thank you for availing us to listen and hear this bill, and I would encourage members to approve it and move it on its way. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any more questions? I thought I saw Representative Mason had her hand up, but now it's not. And I also saw that Representative Long had the brains of his operation there with him for a few seconds. But anyway, any more questions? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 4597 be referred to Ways and Means Committee. And Ms. Spreck, if you'll call the roll.
Yes. One moment. Okay. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Akam.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Green.
Aye.
Representative Hertas.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Keel. Representative Keel. Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Keel. Okay.
And he is.
Representative Keel.
Calls the congregation. I think it takes him 2 weeks to get through the round. which share with you is
with the Chair, if you can indulge me for a second, I'll text Representative Keel.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Tabke.
Well, we have just a second. I just wanted to say thank you very much to you and as well to Representative Albright for all the work that everybody's been doing and helping get this through. And as well as Mr. Geltman has been just an invaluable resource in helping to get this done. So thank you very much on a compressed, difficult timeline on getting this moving for the racing industry in Minnesota and my district. So thank you all.
Mr. Chair, I've sent a message to Representative Keel, so if we could just indulge her for 30 seconds.
Yep. And just like when we're in committee room, sometimes people get called away. Well, she must be tied up. With that, you want to announce the...
Yes, with the vote of 17 ayes and one absent.
With that, the motion is approved and the 4597 has been referred to Ways and Means. And members, I'm going to take a couple seconds here. This is probably going to be our last meeting. So I want to thank everybody in the committee for all your hard work, especially in these last couple months where we've had doing the remote hearings. I want to thank our legislative aide, Ms. Spreck, who as of Monday is going to be taking a leave of absence to take another position. So she won't be with us if we do have to have a further meetings. I want to thank both the partisan and nonpartisan staff for all the hard work they've done. And Mr. Geldman and Mr. Cook, thank you for all your help, especially during these last couple of weeks getting things done. And hopefully this will be our last meeting. There might be something that comes that we have to deal with in the next week and a half. But members, again, thank you all for all your hard work. And I think with that, members, we're adjourned.